likes a good old-fashioned hackathon?
I do.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of EE Journal's long-running electronic engineering podcast called Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, hosted by me, Amelia Dalton. In today's podcast, we're talking about encouraging innovation in machine learning with AD-Link and Intel. Paul Wales and Sergio Velme join me a little later on to discuss AD-Link's recent 2020 vision hack. We talk about the motivations behind the creation of this hackathon, the details of Sergio's winning project entry, and how AD-Link and Intel are looking to raise awareness and solve industrial dilemmas with this unique program. But first, you know it, you love it, it's a little news you may have missed. AI meets 3D printing edition. Now, here on Fish Fry, we certainly love a good 3D printing story. I have been reporting on the advancements of 3D printing for almost a decade. But how can we make 3D printing work for us? How can we make it even better? AI, of course. So get this, a group of engineers from the University of Illinois, with the help of a couple supercomputers, have developed a way to use physics-informed neural networks to predict the outcomes of the complex processes involved in additive manufacturing. Okay, so we all know that 3D printing is going to revolutionize the world, eventually. A big problem, especially with metal additive manufacturing, or AM, is that physical experiments using this medium are expensive and time-consuming. University of Illinois PhD student Kiming Zhu explains the situation like this. The problem is multiphase and involves gas, liquids, solids, and phase transitions between them. Additive manufacturing also has a wide range of spatial and temporal scales. This has led to large gaps between the physics that happens on the small scale and the real product. So, this group of engineers from the University of Illinois look to machine learning to address these challenges and are using deep learning and neural networks to predict the outcomes of these processes. So how? The key here is physics-informed neural networking, or PIN. Now, we all know that neural network models need a whole lot of data for effective training. But when it comes to additive manufacturing, getting high-fidelity data can be quite difficult. But this team from the University of Illinois may have a solution. Zhu explains it like this. By incorporating conservation laws, expressed as partial differential equations, we can reduce the amount of data needed for training and advance the capability of our current models. So, in order to simulate the dynamics of these experiments, they needed to bring in the big guns. The Frontera and Stampede 2 supercomputers at the Texas Advanced Computing Center. So, their two experiments can be broken down into two categories. Solidification, which is when solid and liquid metals interact, and laser beam melting, which just sounds cool, right? So, in the solidification test, they inputted data from their experiments into their neural network. For the test that involved laser beam melting, they actually used experimental data as well as results from their simulations. And very importantly, they also developed a hard enforcement method for boundary conditions, which is a vital step in additive manufacturing problem solving. And guess what? The neural networks worked. Yeah. They were able to recreate the dynamics of both experiments. Su explains the importance of this aspect of the experiment like this. This is the first time that neural networks have been applied to metal additive manufacturing process modeling. We showed that physics-informed machine learning as a perfect platform to seamlessly incorporate data and physics has a big potential in the additive manufacturing field. So this team sees a big future for this kind of neural networks as fast prediction tools in additive manufacturing, especially in terms of providing guidance on the parameter selection, like the temperature distribution or the speed of the laser, or even to map the relationships between additive manufacturing process parameters and the properties of the final product, like its surface roughness. Sue sums up the project like this. The most exciting point is when you see that your model can predict the future using only a small amount of existing data. It's somehow learning the evolution of the process. Previously, I was not very confident on whether we'd be able to predict with good accuracy over temperature, velocity, and geometry of the gas-metal interface. We showed that we were able to make nice data inferences. And we all like nice data inferences, right? So if you want to know even more information about these super cool new additive manufacturing meets machine learning experiments, I've included a couple links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page on eejournal.com. All right, it's time to bring in Paul and Sergio and talk about the AD Link Vision 2020 hack. Let's go. Hi, Sergio. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hello, Amelia. Thank you.
Hi, Paul. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, Amelia. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so we're talking about AD Link's search for next innovation in machine learning technology in collaboration with Intel with the 2020 Vision hack. So, Paul, before we bring in the winning creator to discuss his project, that would be Sergio, what was the motivation to create this contest and what kind of prizes did you offer?
There was a couple of reasons on doing the hack. One was to bring together the community of developers and data scientists. Another was to solve industrial problems in warehousing, manufacturing, energy, and worker safety. But I also wanted to raise awareness of the technology, you know, vision as a sensor, edge computing, and the tools that are out there that are just making it easier and easier to adopt so we can make things much quicker. So, you know, big drive for me was to make it global, you know, reach out to the communities everywhere, developers and data scientists. And so delivering as a hack, rather than just delivering the art of possible, actually making real things, prototypes, and helping them to get that taken to market. You know, at AD Link, we've got the perfect tool that I launched last year, the product manager, Visi AI, which is a developer kit, a single board. You know, it's got the great Intel E3940 CPU and the Movidius X VPU, but it's also got the AD Link Edge platform on there, which that enables less code, more configuration for the communication side of things. And it's absolutely fantastic for using with Vision. So we wanted to, you know, really demonstrate the power of that technology and what we've been worked towards with that, but also bringing the community together and getting to see those tools to leverage.
So, Paul, why did you choose to do this kind of contest during a pandemic?
Some people may say because I'm a little bit mad. I don't know. No, my theory was that, you know, a lot of people here in the UK, we've been working from home from around about the back end of February. You know, it was rolling out across the country that that was the new way of living. And so it got me thinking that actually, you know, a lot of people have a lot more time in front of their computers and in front of their screens that we could really touch base and connect with a lot more people. And also give them a bit of a purpose of something to do, help them upskill, you know, train, teach them how to use this technology and see that there's actually a bit of light at the end of the tunnel as well. Because one of the key drives was, as I said, to find prototypes, products that we could then help go to market as well.
It seems like this hackathon was really popular. How many entries did you have for it and what were the parameters to enter?
I mean, the hack delivered double what I expected, to be quite honest. I'd set myself a little personal goal. We had 1,432 registrations for the hack on Hacker Earth portal that we used. So, you know, that really went well beyond. I sort of set a target of 500-600, to be quite honest. I saw success. We broke the hack down into two phases. So the first phase, I want to make it as easy as possible for people to resonate with the problem and come up with a use case. So simply, you know, delivering what the problem is, a high-level solution, and what the return of investment would be on it. So then the six judges, who were three Intel, three ADLINK, went through those, and we would then reduce that down to the 10 teams we thought were viable to build out as prototypes. One of the amazing things was we had those 1,432 registrations, but through phase one, they started to connect with each other with different skill sets. And that's when they made the submissions down to the 115. So then with those 10 teams that went through into phase one, we received five final submissions. Well, I was going to get a drop off, let's be honest, with hacks. But every single one of those five was absolutely top quality. But, you know, Sergio stood out. So the prize, the big carrot that everybody was aiming for was $10,000, but also go to market with us as well. So we support them and validate in the market, introduce them to customers, do stuff like this, help promoting the great submissions that they did and the other teams as well. One of the other key things that I should really mention as well is what we did with support was really different with the hack. We really made sure that we did that, not just with content, but with the amazing Intel and ADLINK teams. So the 10 teams had direct contact 24/7 because they were all over the world. We had 24/7 support with the teams who went beyond the call of duty as well. So, you know, when all of a sudden Sergio's working at 2 a.m., we always made sure we had somebody to support him and answer any questions that he had that we could help him get things moving quickly. We didn't want any stalls or anything as well. So those teams were absolutely brilliant and absolutely commendable on the work they did.
That makes sense. So you collaborated with Intel and the OpenVINO team with this hack. Paul, can you tell me a little bit about that part of the process?
Yeah, sure. So with the kit being Intel-based, with Vizzy spending quite a lot of time on calls with the Intel team, when we started to sort of sketch this out, it was the perfect partnership. So I put together a bit of a proposal on what we were looking to achieve, the benefits of doing it. And the Intel team, the IoTG team, OpenVINO team, was so supportive of it. They really liked the concept of it and, you know, also taking it beyond the usual hack. Quite often, hacks are a bit overly corporate focused, not really for the developers and the participants. Quite often, you know, feedback on research and hacks that I've been part of over the years is that a lack of support. It's kind of like, here you go, here's what we want you to do. Go make this magic happen. And it's like, well, I know this bit, but I don't know this bit. How do I get help with that bit? So, you know, want to make sure that we delivered on that. Also, you know, quite often with hacks, it's, yay, you've won a prize, congratulations. And then it's bang, fizzle. Whereas, you know, some amazing things get dropped to the wayside of like, all right, we've done that, move on. So I incorporated into the hack that we would support the winner in go-to-market, you know, introduce them to our networks across Intel and ADLINK, you know, help them demonstrate the value of what they've delivered to help them scale out as a product and as a service and, you know, hopefully as a business as well. With the support with Intel, one of the things that we decided on was that we do loads of live streams. So for the past 4 months, I think I'm having withdrawal symptoms at the minute. We did about 27, 28 live streams, and they consisted of obviously the announcement. We did training on OpenVINO where people could win neural sticks if they completed a little project and shared it socially, which created some very amusing content on social. We did industry insights as well. So, you know, it's not just about the technology side, but enabling people who've got the technology know-how to understand what the problems are. So, you know, we had members of the teams from Intel and ADLINK and outside of the two businesses talking about challenges that are there to sort of give some insight and ideas for people. So, yeah, a lot of content, a lot of fun, probably more fun than my management probably wanted me to have. But as a team and a collaboration, Intel was just absolutely superb.
That's fantastic. Okay, Sergio, tell me about your winning project entry. You created a machine vision Pokeyoke, right? Tell my audience more about your design.
Pokeyoke is a Japanese term that means mistake proofing. And my solution tried to avoid mistakes at assembly processes. We try to help the operators in an assembly line in a factory to do the things the right way. For that purpose, I create a 3D printed kit, train several models with that kit, and then I can verify with a camera if the operator is placing a part the right way or the wrong way.
Fantastic. Okay, so Paul, how do you see this hack helping our industry as a whole?
Numerous ways, to be fair. So, you know, I think all the teams that submitted have demonstrated how diverse and scalable using vision as a sensor is. We've really demonstrated the real value of using edge computing and also the speed to be able to pull things together and deliver as well, I think is one thing that's really resonated with me with what the work the guys have done. the final phase, phase two, you know, the teams had like 6-7 weeks to build their prototype. And if you watch the video of Sergio's submission, I mean, my God, what he's built is just absolutely phenomenal. And it really demonstrates humans building manufacturing parts and without any mistakes, without accidents, you know, making sure they're wearing the correct protective clothing and such. And then it gives accountability as well to show that, you know, when a product's being made and if there's any comeback on that element or that part of the process, they can go back and check and see. The technology should protect them on that, you know? One of the other things I think with Sergio's submission is that he's basically created a demo kit to put in a bag. When you're a sales guy, which is my heritage, and you go in front of a customer, you can get a customer to touch and feel something. It really gets their imagination going. So, you know, I'm so excited to take what Sergio's got and get out and see customers. You know, here in the UK, we're allowed to go and see people from next week, which is exciting. That to be able to take that to a customer and go, hey, what do you know about machine vision, computer vision? How do you know that can help your business? And there'll be a lot of ers and erms and stuff like that. Pour it out on the desk, connect the Visi, set up a camera and go, right, build that. And I'll be like, well, what do you mean? I'll say, follow the instructions. And when they do that and go, how can that help your business? It's going to start the imagination going. And so I find that really, really exciting. In fact, I've been speaking to a couple of companies over the past couple of days about stuff that they're doing in machine vision. And I've been talking with them about their sales process. And it's really interesting. Like the common thing is it's such a long sales cycle. And I'm thinking, yeah, I think you can pretty much cut out a lot of that sales cycle when you actually let customers touch and feel and demo really quickly without it having to be implemented on their site. Just show them quite quickly. And I think, you know, having equipment like a Visi really enables that to be really quick and transportable and easy. And when you've got a great 3D printer like Sergio has behind him, it certainly makes things a lot easier as well because you can actually give people touch and feel, you know?
Yes, touch and feel goes a really long way, especially in this situation. All right, guys, it is time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, since Sergio and Paul, you have not been on my show before, here we go. Now, Sergio, how you're going to go first? So if you could have one meal right now, Sergio, it doesn't matter if the restaurant is closed, we can't travel there, you need a passport, it's on the other side of your city even, what would you have?
Pizza. Pizza.
Any kind of particular pizza there, Sergio?
With meat. Barbecue, maybe.
I like that answer. All right, Paul. Now, we've been in lockdown forever, it seems, even though we're slowly starting to ease up places. What would you have?
So I used to live in part-time in Miami a couple of years ago, and I so miss ceviche. I can't find any decent ceviche here in the UK. There was just phenomenal. So yeah, Miami ceviche for me.
Nice answer. And you know, Sergio, I'm not sure if I have had a pizza answer yet. I've been asking that question for over a year now, and I think you may be the first one.
Of all the food he can have in Spain, and he went for pizza.
I mean, love it.
Come on.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Paul and Sergio. It was a pleasure speaking to both of you.
Thanks. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Amelia.
Don't forget to check out my brand new maker-themed monthly fish fry podcast series called Makers Today. Launched on June 23rd in honor of Women in Engineering Day, this first episode features maker, teacher, content creator for Element 14's learning circuit, and power racing record holder, Karen Corbeil. Karen and I talk about the maker movement today, the cool stuff she likes to design, and more. And hey, if you're a maker and you'd like to be featured on this series, please let me know. You can send me an email at amelia@eejournal.com, send me a message on LinkedIn, or carrier pigeon, whatever works best for you. And hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And don't forget, if you want to follow my personal Twitter account, check out AmeliaD1978. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, sure, I dig it. You can follow us or me on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/EEJournal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series hosted by, who would that be again? Me, that's right. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. And don't forget that you can subscribe to this here podcast through Spotify, Podbean, Apple Podcasts, or just about anywhere you get your podcasts. And remember, if you'd like to further support this podcast, please leave me a review on that podcasting platform of your choice. And 5 stars, too. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology or, heck, you just want to chat, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of July 9th, 2021, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.